Welcome to The Connection, a weekly radio program where we share our experiences and expertise with stories of caring, courage, and change right here in Connecticut. Listen to learn about needed resources to improve your well-being and transform your life. Now, here are the hosts of The Connection, Lisa DeMattis-Lepore and Ann Baldwin.
Good morning, everybody. Welcome to another edition of The Connection. It's so great to have you along with myself, Ann Baldwin, and my co-host of this program, who I don't get to see in person these days, but that's okay. She's still here with us, Lisa DeMattis-Lepore. Lisa is the president and CEO of The Connection. And Lisa, how are you hanging in there?
Good morning. I'm hanging in there. I just feel like right now the most important thing is to stay healthy and try to focus on, you know, keeping my staff safe and our clients safe and my family and friends. And it's sad. The news is hard to watch.
You know, we'll just have to see what happens. And I'm sure that our next guest might have a little bit more insight into, you know, how things are going, where things are going. We're just so excited to have Representative Brandon McGee Jr. on the program with us. And, you know, Brandon, you are my representative in Windsor, Connecticut. You represent the towns of Windsor and Hartford, and you're also the House Chair of the Housing Committee and the Chairman of the Black and Puerto Rican Caucus.
It's a delight to be on, and always I appreciate the work that the two of you do in sharing information and allowing for us to come on your platform to share additional information.
Thank you.
You know, Brandon, you're such a community activist and an architect of social solutions for so many people in Connecticut, and you are so inspirational, and you've done so much for Connecticut. And I told you prior that I follow you on Facebook, and it's just a very small piece of who you are in a bigger picture, but your level of humanity and your care and concern for the community is stellar, and you are so well respected. And I remember the first time that I met you was at the LOB, and we had a meeting together, and you know, I remember leaving that meeting and thinking, wow, you know, we need you up there. We need you as governor. So I'm just throwing that out there.
I appreciate that. I need to call you guys every day.
But you understand. Here's the thing that's so, like, one of the things that I think is so great about you is you really care about communities. I'm not saying no one else does, but your level of care and concern and what you do with your time to make a difference is so important. So can you talk to us sort of about, like, how did that all happen, and tell us some of the great stuff you're doing right now?
Yeah, no, I appreciate it. So, you know, a little over, I'm losing track of time. Some days I don't even know what day it is. But I want to say it's about 7 weeks. Are we 7 weeks in, 8 weeks in quarantine? I forget what it is. But we started out, and I say we because I'm working with a lot of community partners to respond and support those that are in need. So I quickly gathered a group of folks under the leadership of our commissioner, Department of Housing and Corrections, because I was just so worried about people formerly incarcerated, those unsheltered, not having immediate needs met, like food. We didn't have as much information as we have now on COVID, and we're still doing research, but it was just frightening. You know, everyone was panicking, not knowing where to go, where homeless people would go, when inmates are released, where are they going? And I said, we've got to do something, and I got to start in my own district. And that's what we did. So we quickly organized a three-church partnership, not limited to the three churches, but we started with the three. We coordinated a schedule where we would feed people every single day at 6 p.m. Because we know that the schools were feeding children breakfast and lunch. And so we decided, all right, our priority is to make sure unsheltered folks are eating, but anybody's welcome. And having said that, we've been able to secure funding from Harvard Foundation for Public Giving and other, you know, private donors to just step up and say, look, we will adopt this initiative and we will provide whatever money is needed to continue providing food. So we've been doing that. And from there, it stemmed out to organizing testing opportunities for communities throughout the city of Hartford and even in the town of Windsor to go get tested. And so it's been extremely difficult, as you can imagine, you know, working from home. And again, like I told you before, my wife and I, we both work full-time and we have two little ones. But in between feeding and taking naps and watching Sesame Street and singing and playing with the Barbie dolls, you know, I'm able to at least figure out, okay, so what's our next move? And as the chair of the Black and Puerto Rican Caucus, I've been able to really leverage our influence and our political will to put pressure on the administration, and they've been great partners, okay? But put a little pressure on the administration so that they're moving a little bit quicker, because we do a lot of meeting and talking and talking and meeting and meeting, and it's just like, guys, we need to move forward. So it's been some very trying days. I would not even lie about that. You know, some days I just sit and I scratch my head like, what in the world is going on? You know, but I do know that we are, we as in the residents in the state of Connecticut, we are resilient people. And this is not the first pandemic that we've been faced with. And so we will get through this. What we've been doing, the BPRC and also the Windsor-Hartford delegation, is meeting with stakeholders via social media platforms like Zoom or Facebook or WebEx, shall I continue, you know, all of these various platforms to remain connected. It's been kind of difficult because you also have a lot of our senior population who still vote, very much active, but they're not on Facebook. Right. And they're not calling in to these conference call meetings. And so, you know, they're reading the newspapers. Right. And so we need to, and I'm telling myself this even as I'm talking, get back to writing more op-eds and getting in the newspapers so that some of the other constituencies can remain abreast as to what's going on. And it's not just the daily, you know, briefings that the governor provides, but you're also hearing from the state legislature.
Right.
I told someone this yesterday because they were like, well, we're not hearing from the state reps. What is going on? And I said, well, let me help you understand what's happened here. Governor Lamont literally has complete power to do what he needs to do when he wants to do it under this state of emergency. Okay? It's just the waving of that pen, and he can go ahead and do what he needs to do. And frankly, I think he's been doing a pretty darn good job.
If you're just tuning in, we're speaking with Representative Brandon McGee Jr., and he is a very involved representative. He represents the towns of Windsor and Hartford. We should also mention that you mentioned earlier you do have a full-time job as well. You're the marketing and communications coordinator for CREC, Capital Regional Education Council. Hey, Brandon, I want to throw something out to you. You know, we just talked about how the government, you know, he has the power, he has the people. We go back to that May 20th opening date, but yet recently, you know, it was also announced that he's hired an out-of-state consulting firm at the $2 million price tag to be consultants on reopening the state of Connecticut. Now, it's always been my impression as a voter, as a resident of the state of Connecticut, that's why we have decision makers. That's why we have lawmakers. That's why we have special committees. And now here we are, you know, talking about reopening, and you got to bring in a $2 million out-of-state consultant firm?
You know, my take on that is similar to a lot of conversations we've been having around recruitment of teachers, right? And we're always talking about going outside of the state of Connecticut to recruit talent, you know. And in these cases, when you're talking about reopening the state of Connecticut, why not tap into the existing resources, talent we have right here in the state of Connecticut? So, you know, I probably would have taken, not probably, I would have taken a different direction to stimulate our economy and maybe hire various consultants to help us with messaging and making sure, you know, we're sharing the information to all of the many different demographics we have here in the state of Connecticut. There's not much to be said on that. That was their decision, but I probably would have taken a different route, especially at the tune of $2 million.
Okay. We'll just leave that where it is.
I don't know the rationale. I don't know the rationale behind it, and I'm sure they have some really smart people working with them or working within the administration, and they came to that conclusion because of it. So
okay, that's where we'll agree to disagree. But anyway, all right. Well, let's move along. You know, and whether they're in state or out,
I think we actually agree.
Oh, we do agree. Okay. Okay, good. Because I just don't get it. If why we need, you know, we should have those people around us anyway. We've got these volunteer groups of very intelligent people who've been on this panel to help reopen, and now it just seems to me like it's doesn't make sense. But you are doing some good things, and so we know we have so many people in our population, Lisa, you can speak to this, that just, you know, don't even have the resources that we have. And she talked about gratitude earlier. We have a roof over our head. We can probably get by with the food we've got, but that's not the situation for everybody.
That's right.
That's right.
You know, it's interesting when I'm out there every day, and you see the number of people who are coming, and they're just not the ones that you would assume, oh, yeah, they need it. You know how people make loose comments like, okay, maybe they needed that. These are people who are working, mm-hmm. and they appreciate the ability to have the extra food because, and hear me out on this one, the expenses within the household, like water bill increasing, electricity increasing. So everything is shifting. Everything is shifting, and the money that you would otherwise have a little extra, right, to spend on groceries, now you're having to put towards your light bill or, you know, in some cases, some daycares are actually open and expecting, you know, people to pay. I am just glad that we're able to provide an immediate need, that being food to people, no judgment. We don't care who you are, where you're from, because we get a lot of people outside of the Hartford-Windsor towns to come in. I mean, as far as Avon, okay? Coming down and getting food and just so thankful that this is available on a consistent basis.
Mm-hmm.
I'm also seeing, though, a lot of young people in need of housing. A lot of young people are couch surfing. There are literally generations of families living in apartments. Mm-hmm. And then when you begin to talk about this idea of flattening the curve and really figuring out, you know, how best to support communities like the north end of Hartford and other places as we continue to go through this pandemic, it's just a burden because there are certain things that I just don't have the capacity to do.
Right.
However, connecting with DOH and DOC, which I want to talk a little, Department of Corrections, I want to talk a little bit about, you serve as a voice for many of the voiceless who are just saying, look, can you help me out with getting, you know, my unemployment check? And we all know DOL has been backed up for about 8 to 9 weeks now. And so people are really hurting. Our businesses are hurting. So I understand one side of the argument. We got to get back. We got to start working so people can, you know, start paying their bills, et cetera. But you know what? Lives are so much more important than reopening a state. And you both, I'm sure you've already read it. There is concern that there's a strand within this COVID-19 that's affecting young children. But here's the crazy thing: people are just loosening their stay at home, stay safe. Like, they're out. Everybody's out, and I'm like, guys.
I know. I noticed that.
You've got to get back in. You can't let this thing go. But anyway, that's what I'm hearing on the ground level. I'm in talks with our FQHC, Federally Qualified Health Center, CHS. You might be aware of that. That's in the town of Windsor,
yeah,
in the southern portion, and also Charter Oak and Trinity Health System, to figure out a way to bring the mobile unit to the community and provide testing and informational types of campaigns to educate people. And then the other side of this is our friends, our family, who are under the supervision of Department of Corrections. Where do I start with that? Go ahead. I'm sorry. I said that just.
You know, I'm sure you're aware that we opened the first COVID respite center for DOC at DOC's request.
Thank you. Yes.
Oh, you're welcome. And so we're filled to capacity. We started off at 12, and then we were able to double capacity, so we're at 24. But we also know that there's a huge need for the DOC overflow for guys that, because DOC has reduced the percentage of admissions so that you have room at your program for quarantine, there are those guys that need beds. And so we're currently working right now with DOC because we'd like to help DOC out, because we do have a program right now in New Haven that is empty. You know, we have a floor open. But, you know, even with our youth, Brandon, we're like filled the capacity for our youth program. We need more programs for youth. I mean, you know, I think housing is key. But I'm going to let you get back on with DOC, because, you know, that's to me. What about our women at DOC? I want to open a women's DOC program, another one.
Yeah, there's another group of advocates who are pushing for early release, and, you know, they were actually protesting in front of the governor's mansion a few weeks back.
I saw
And, you know, I'm with them on that, and here's why. For some of the inmates who have low-level convictions you know, could very well be home with their families and avoid COVID. I also caution many of the advocates, you know, you want people to be released, but you also want them to have the proper resources upon
release. Absolutely.
And oftentimes that's not been the case. And so all you're doing is making their reintroduction to their community difficult, because they're not provided with housing. They don't have a job. And now let's slap this pandemic on it. Where are they going from there? And so that's been the struggle in that particular conversation, in addition to, you know, some folks saying, look, we're in here and we're not being quarantined. And those who are infected, we don't really know. And so there's a struggle, you know, and internally. And I have been in constant communication with Commissioner Roland Cook and his staff, who have been absolutely phenomenal and open with meeting with me and sharing information. But there's still a challenge internally. I think we need to put more financial dollars to supporting the transition of many of our folks in there. As they come home, like you said, we need a woman's shelter or housing, you know, and we don't have that.
You know, the one thing that brought me to Connection was my passion in working in the field and seeing that there was such a lack of treatment that was gender specific. And don't get me wrong, we need gender specific programming for men and women. But that's what led me to the connection, because that the ability to serve these women instead of going to jail for typically legal issues related to their substance abuse, to be able to, you know, open that and support that. But with our reentry supported housing programs that we have statewide with DOC, you know, these guys are thriving. Like, they're really getting their life back together and giving back to society, and they deserve that, right? And we're filled to capacity there, too. I mean, we, you know, housing is key. But you and I both know, Brandon, it's more than just housing. It's housing with services, right? It's housing with support that makes housing successful, right? And seeing people thrive and giving them an opportunity to rebuild their soul and rewrite their story. Because all these stories are horrific stories. If people didn't choose one day, I'm just going to go to jail today. They are a product of what they were subjected to. And so I'm a huge supporter of people, you know, getting back into society and being successful and doing what they need to do. So, you know, we could talk about this for hours, but I want to be part of that solution. So,
I appreciate that.
It's so key.
One of the things that my leadership, that speaker, Joe Errol Simowitz, and Majority Leader Matt Ritter, they did reach out to all of the chairs, and we meet regularly to just talk through where we are. Although session is over, we still submitted a list of all of our bills, maybe 2 to 3, not all of them, but 2 to 3, that we think as chairmen and women could potentially be a part of a larger package that the governor could sign on to. And, you know, speaking of having access to housing, I've always been a huge proponent of, you know, making sure those who are returning home have that opportunity to have, you know, a place that they can call home. So there are bills in there. There's another bill on tenant protection, meaning, you know, not allowing for landlords to just arbitrarily just tack on additional late fees just because they can do
right.
it. And also address slum landlords. There's a lot at stake. And my thing is, I still would want to honor our democracy, and that we still have to talk about the importance of voting. We still have to talk about the importance of engaging people where they are. And this is all new. This is all new, and you got to think outside of the box in order to remain connected to your constituencies.
Okay, so Representative McGee, I'm going to ask you to do probably the impossible. We got about 30 seconds. We got about 30 seconds. You know, what do you want our listeners to know? You've got more of an insider look than we do. I think everybody's frustrated for their own reasons. What can you tell us maybe to make us feel better right now?
I would say continue to remain hopeful. Love on your family. Do some things that you hadn't done in a long time, like a DIY project. Do it yourself. project. Spend some time with your loved ones. But most importantly, stay home and stay safe. Read a book. Do something that you hadn't done in a long time, but also remain informed, okay? However way you can do that. And I want you to be blessed and enjoy your time with your family.
Spoken like a true Albertus Magnus graduate. You and I have something in common.
Woohoo! Yes, we do.
Okay, go for it.
Well, thank you for your leadership. Thank you for your dedication to the people, you know, not only of your district, but of your state. We do appreciate that. And you stay safe, too.
So grateful for you.
Right. Absolutely.
So grateful for the two of you as well. Thank you so much.
Thank
Have
you.
A great afternoon.
Thank you.
Or morning,
you
I should
be
say.
Well.
That's right. And we want to thank all of our listeners for tuning into this edition of The Connection right here on
WTIC News Talk 1080.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.